powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Mike Saul. You guys have heard the name. He has a morning show here on 710 ESPN Seattle. He does this thing where Jake, he looks around the station and listens to sound from around the station and then responds to some takes from Wyman or Bob or me or you. And it's fun. You get a chance to listen to what else is going on the other shows and other conversations that people are having that might differ from your own. And there is a conversation of hours that he responded to. So yesterday, you and I were talking with people. We had callers on to talk about how close or far away the Seahawks are from getting back to a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And we all kind of settled on this idea that, like, look, if you're going to get back, it starts with building in the trenches. So here's the clip, and then most importantly, here's Salk responding to us.
In the NFL, you've got to make trade-offs. All right, let's take a look at that Bengals team. I went a different direction with it. I saw a team that went a quarterback that was able to overcome the fact that his offensive line was a sieve and still win the game and throw for 350 yards in it. I thought that was pretty impressive. But the NFL kind of requires two things. One, it requires you to make trade-offs. If you want to improve the Bengals' offensive line, you can. They just needed to draft an offensive lineman instead of Ja'Marr Chase. You cool with that? Are they the same team with a better left guard but no Ja'Marr Chase?
Well, Penei Sewell was available, and a lot of people, including me, thought they made a poor decision in taking Chase at the time
because maybe they did.
Burrow got hurt the year before.
That's fine. I'm not saying that you shouldn't make that decision. You may decide that offensive line and Penei Sewell, who was also really, really good this year, maybe that's more important for your team. But you don't get both.
So what Salk is saying, Jake, and anyone listening, is that, look, you guys might be saying, hey, the Seahawks have to build up the trenches. The Seahawks need to add to the pass rush. The Seahawks need to go out and get premier offensive linemen, and they need to add to all of these places in free agency. And he's saying, look, it's easier to say that than it is to actually do it, because if you have $35 million on a quarterback, and if you're about to pay DK Metcalf almost $20 million or however much that is, if you're paying $17.5 to Jamal Adams, then you don't get to go out and get premier free agent offensive linemen at mm-hmm. all five spots. Like, you have to pick and choose where you want to make those sacrifices. For instance, the Seahawks chose to make sacrifices at corner rather than spending on an elite cornerback in free agency or making a trade, and opted instead to pay Jamal Adams that contract and go and store up on some defensive linemen.
Right. And to Salk's overall point, I don't disagree with him that there are trade-offs that you have to make. You cannot, you know, go out there and spend your way like you can in baseball to win. You can't, you know, all of a sudden have a league that has have and have nots when you are in a league that is built on parity. However, that isn't necessarily true. I'm not saying, or I don't think either one of us have advocated, to my knowledge, that they can fix and solve all of their problems in 1 year or in one offseason. But that is not to say that through these other teams that they have gotten to their point of roster construction and roster building over time and have been able to generate and create well-rounded teams and rosters over time, over a few years. That is overlooking the fact that you have the opportunity in the draft, the opportunity in free agency, and in the last couple years, that take by Mike Salk, in my opinion, is letting the Seahawks off the hook a little bit in terms of what they have done and how they've gone about acquiring. Stacey, over the last 2 years, they've had $100 million plus to spend in free agency. What do they have to show for it? What do they have to show for that money that is spent in free agency?
I'm trying to look back and think of over the last 2 years. I mean, Brandon Shelby became a starter. Is there a very, very obvious? No, Quandre Diggs was a trade.
Exactly. So you have not been able to necessarily produce star players and serious, real, capable starters on a consistent basis from those acquisitions. The draft, right? There's some areas there. I think that you have to pick and choose where you're going to spend your money and be very, very direct with how you're going to go about it, and also when it comes to the draft. And that is essentially how you create and build your roster. And to me, you have opportunities that you missed out. This past offseason, what are we talking about again? We're talking about the center position when you had an opportunity to legitimately address it last year with Corey Linsley or Creed Humphreys, and now it's another problem again for you going into this next offseason. You had a chance to address your right tackle position in 2020, and instead you signed, you know, 20 offensive linemen, right? I mean, there are your pass rush. It's been a problem for 4 years at least now, Stacey, and you've gone after volume instead of going after direct impact. Those are decisions that you have made or that the team has made to try and spread money rather than, you know, go after a top-of-the-market player, and it just hasn't paid out for them. Mm-hmm. So although I agree that you're going to have to sacrifice in some areas and you're going to need players to outplay their contracts on any roster, that to me isn't an excuse for not, you know, guess what? DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, they were draft picks. That's how you got those players, not by going out in free agency and nabbing those players. So, I just think that it's giving a little too much of a pass in terms of roster construction, and you don't necessarily have to, because you have great skill players, that doesn't mean you can't have a great offensive line. I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, I completely get I'm kind of echoing what you're saying, but it's because I feel just as passionately about it. I completely get what Salk is saying. The league is built for parity. And this idea that I think the idea that Russell Wilson is restricting you from ever making any additions is just as misguided as the idea that you can make any addition you want and buy your way out of any issue, right? Like, both are, I think, misplaced thoughts. In my opinion, the reality is, if you're going to have a premier quarterback, he is going to take up more of your cap than any other player. That's just the nature of the position. Like, no one is thinking that a punter or a kicker or your second or third wide receiver or a tight end is mm-hmm. getting nearly as much as your quarterback, if that's your franchise quarterback. Like, no one's fooling themselves. You don't have to divvy up your salary cap equally. However, if you have a premier quarterback and a premier left tackle, maybe you don't have a premier run-stuffing defensive tackle or edge rusher or outside cornerback, all of which are some of the most expensive positions in the sport. I think what Seattle has gotten themselves into is not just, oh, we're paying Russell Wilson so we can't afford all these other positions. It's, we have chosen to invest draft capital and money in other positions that haven't worked out, and now we have areas where we're spending a lot of money on a lot of draft capital on Jamal Adams, who is a fine safety, but like, would you have been better off investing in your pass rush? Arguably, if you're not going to use Jamal Adams to get those sacks, then like, you need to find them somewhere, and you didn't have them this year. Mm-hmm. You thankfully finished with what, 32, because Carlos Dunlap racked up 8.5 with the bulk of those coming near the end of the season. If you don't have that run that he goes on at the end of the season, you finish with something a lot closer to 29 sacks, which is what you had the year prior to last when you were like, wow, you really need to up that because that was pretty abysmal production from your sack totals. You almost mm-hmm. did that again for the second time in 3 years had Carlos Dunlap not gone off. So will Seattle need to choose, should they extend Russell Wilson or continue to pay Russell Wilson, whether or not to pay Bobby? Yeah. Whether or not to, pay a premier, let's say that Daryl Taylor becomes this great edge rusher, is it going to become difficult to pay Daryl Taylor and pay Jordan Brooks and pay all these guys? Yeah, eventually it all does. But like, the idea is you make enough of the right moves in the same window, and they haven't been able to do that, if that makes
right.
sense.
No, 100%. And the other thing that I would say is that, what are your priorities? What are your priorities as a team? And how do you go about building that team, right? When you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, for example, what is their clear-cut priority? It is the offense. It is, we are going to do everything around Patrick Mahomes. So when Patrick Mahomes has a big contract, or he already signed his big contract, and Stacey, in 2022, when he finally has a cap hit that's going to be $35+ million, You know what I still expect? I still expect the Kansas City Chiefs to find a way to put weapons around Patrick Mahomes and to provide tremendous protection for him. Now, what's going to be the big question mark? What it always has been for the Kansas City Chiefs over the last 4 years is, what does this defense look like? How is this defense going to be? And they haven't been great because that's the sacrifice that they've made. That's a philosophical choice. And guess what? It's worked really well for them because they've been super elite in the area that they decided to be elite in. And so, you know, what I would ask Mike Salk is, okay, what do the Seattle Seahawks want to be elite in? What do they want to be elite in? And does the money and the resources that they are allocating, do they provide contribute to the formula that is what they want to be elite in? And right now, I don't think it is. I don't think it is at all. And I don't believe that's because you're paying Russell Wilson. I agree with you, Stacey. I believe it's an allocation of how you've gone about spending your money, where you've decided to spend it, and how you've decided to spend it more so than anything else. And very clearly, to me, the best way to get their philosophy, realized in the best way is to invest more in your offensive line on premier play, invest more on your defensive line in premier play, and that's how you have to make your decisions moving forward.
Well, and I don't know that Cincinnati is the perfect comparison to draw here, because if we're talking about where to invest and where you have to spend money, you used a draft pick on Ja'Marr Chase, who ended up having like the best rookie receiving year.
Correct.
By like any other rookie. So the idea that you made a huge sacrifice was just in that draft you chose to go with Ja'Marr Chase, which paid off for you over an offensive lineman. You're going to have Ja'Marr Chase on a rookie deal now for 3 years, which means now the nice payoff you get, the other side of that, is that you can spend money on some free agent offensive linemen if you want. Or you can go and draft an offensive lineman next year. You're not going to be picking as high in the round now, but you can trade up. You can make trades. You can acquire an offensive lineman via trade. So I don't know that saying, oh, you chose to, you know, like make a sacrifice by going with Chase is quite the same. It's a little bit of a false equivalency of saying, well, you can't pay offensive linemen if you want to pay these guys. You're not really paying Ja'Marr Chase. He's on a rookie deal. Like,
correct.
Yeah, he's a first-round pick, but, like, that's where you want to get guys. You want to get guys on rookie deals that are outperforming those deals.
And they found a way to make Ja'Marr Chase pretty darn successful, right? I mean, when they made that pick, when they made that selection, they have found a way to get the best out of that player, and therefore, they are in the playoffs right now.
Well,
therefore, they've exceeded expectations. And guess what, Stacey? I would be shocked if the Cincinnati Bengals don't make more of an effort in this next offseason to address their offensive line. There are stages and waves that you go in when you're starting from the ground up, like the Cincinnati Bengals are, right? The Seattle Seahawks aren't starting from the ground up, and that's what makes it more difficult. You know, if you're going to look at it from Pete Carroll and John Schneider's perspective, it's incredibly difficult when you win on a consistent basis, you don't have, you know, the top-end picks in every round, and you're having to spend more on, you know, a quarterback, a great quarterback. You're having to spend more on, you know, Bobby Wagner. You don't have as free of cap space. But the decisions that they have made in order to improve and to get the best out of their talent, I don't think has been reflective of the overall philosophy that they want to have. And their approach to spread their money thin in key areas, such as offensive lines, such as pass rush, that has been a decision that they have made. It's not necessarily because they didn't have the funds. It's just the overall approach that they wanted to take.
Fun conversation, though. I'll have to get Salk on for another debate about this and where you have to make sacrifices in a league built for parity. I could talk about it endlessly. Right now, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, this news breaking a little more than an hour ago. Sean Payton reportedly stepping away as head coach of the Saints after 15 seasons. What's the real headline?
You know, weird corresponding headline here. Sean Payton also said there are some incredible deals to be had in the Dallas real estate market. So, very
why
weird.
Why would he add that?
We also got a listener submission for NFL headlines. The headline was Sean Payton leaves the Saints with some amazing numbers. This submission from Isaiah, who says, let me channel my inner Stacey Ross for real headlines. Sean Payton leaves the Saints with $74 million over the cap, and Taysom Hill is the franchise quarterback, is what
I think you meant
to say.
Job well done.
Good job, Isaiah.
Good job, Texter. We appreciate you. Yes. Sean Payton is walking away from a dumpster fire situation. He is walking away from basically the Saints that are in a very difficult position here. But I also think that when Sean Payton doesn't have a franchise quarterback to rely on and to coach, it takes away. I bet you he was going through the year, Stacey, going through all these quarterbacks. Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill.
Trevor Siemian.
Trevor Siemian. Thank you, Curtis.
Ian Book.
And thinking to himself, my gosh, this is not fun. This is not fun. I am not enjoying my job here at all.
I am not having a good time.
Well, remember, at the end of the season, the Saints reached out to Drew Brees to see if he would come back for a week.
Yes. Please. Please, Drew, come back. All right? We know you're not in football shape, but, like, please, man, come back. I mean, they were desperate. And I think for Sean Payton, on one end, it's like, man, it really stinks that you're leaving this franchise high and dry like this. But on the other end, I don't blame him. I don't blame him for walking away and potentially looking at a situation where, hey, the Saints aren't going to be very good. And I can go and have a very relaxing couple years, get paid, doing some, you know, studio role for some network. And then when the time comes and the moment's right, heading into 2024, or if a team wants to trade for me the following season, then maybe I'll get back into it. And maybe the Dallas Cowboys is the perfect scenario for me. Maybe it's some other team in 2 years that an opportunity presents itself with a great quarterback somewhere that Sean Payton looks at this and says, heck yeah, I'm ready to jump back into things. And so I think that's the position that Sean Payton's put this in, is that he will come back on his time and when he thinks that there's an opportunity to make a big splash immediately when he returns.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Tom Brady, in a podcast, says that his family life will play a big role in deciding about his playing future. What's the real headline?
You know who's not taking his family into consideration when deciding about his playing future? Aaron Rodgers. Someone texted in, and they were like, Stacey, horrible news. Aaron Rodgers reconciled with his parents.
I don't know. I think they're just saying that to get you to stop.
Ruining all of my headlines. I think so, too. I'll never stop.
Even though we know the punchline, like, it still hits.
It does. And, you know, here's the thing. This is from one of those people that says, I have a friend who knows the parents. This is, you know, like, prove your sources, okay? That's what we want to know. We want you to prove your sources before we believe this. Stacey is not going to believe this until she gets firm proof, because
Until then, guess what? I'm going to keep reporting my version of the story.
I would say percentage-wise, maybe about like 70% of our headlines are shots at Aaron Rodgers.
So easy.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. The 2022 Baseball Hall of Fame class will be unveiled this afternoon. Who knows if anybody's actually going to make it?
I don't know.
What is the real headline?
That also means today marks the end of one of the longest-running bits in sports radio. Should Barry Bonds be in the Hall of Fame? Now, earlier when I did this, I acted as though that bit was graduating. The Should Barry Bonds Be in the Hall of Fame sports radio bit was graduating, and someone was like, this song's so annoying, don't play it again. So I decided not. Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Whoops.
There it goes again. Congratulations. Barry Bonds, should he be in the Hall of Fame? It's been a beautiful, beautiful decade with you. I've loved it. You won't soon be forgotten.
The beauty of it, though, is that the next debate is, should Alex Rodriguez be in the Hall of Fame?
Start the music again!
Yeah!
Oh, man.
Should Alex Rodriguez be in the Hall of Fame?
It's like this song, and there's a couple other songs that is always used for, like, graduation.
Oh, Green Day's Good Riddance.
Yeah!
Time of your life.
Hope you have the time of your life.
Oh, gross.
Please make
every time I hear these songs, I just immediately think of those situations, those scenarios, and people crying about people that they'll never talk to or see the next day as soon as graduation is over. I will miss you so much. No, you won't. You'll never talk to me again. See you later.
It's going to be really awkward when we run into each other at a Target 10 years from now, but until then, see ya.
Bye.
And typically when you're looking at your worst, you know, it just is like, gosh.
I'll never forget. I ran into this girl. I can't believe it. I'm just going to make up her name. I ran into this girl, Mary. Her name was Susan. I ran into this girl that I went to high school with who, like, I don't know why. We just, like, never talked to each other, never particularly got along for no reason. And she always kind of had the upper hand. And you know it's always that person you run into when you're like, I just took a shower. My hair's wet. No makeup. You were running there quickly to, like, grab some groceries and you're about to leave. And it's like, Stacy, is that you? And you want to be like, no, it's not me. I have to leave. Vitamin C plays as you run out of the store. As our lives change. Screaming. All right, we're going to take a look around the rest of the NFL. Bills offensive coordinator potentially moving on. Plus, speaking of the Bills, fans still upset about something Tyreek Hill might have gotten away with in that game. It's all coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's take a look around the rest of the NFL. Might as well start with the big news of the day. Sean Payton is reportedly stepping back as head coach of the Saints. That from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. Now, it's unclear whether or not Sean Payton is retiring for good or whether or not he's temporarily stepping back. He's under contract with the Saints through 2024. So if he were to step back and pursue coaching, he'd need to be traded. Whereas if he were to just step back and, let's say, go over the course of his contract or spend some time in some other gig, like in the booth or whatever, then maybe he could move on somewhere else.
Yeah, I really think that this is a move to put him in a position to move on to somewhere else, whether it's via trade the next year or waiting it out past 2024 when his contract ends, and then getting back into it when there is a clear and obvious opportunity with the right team. And the thing is that it's crazy because Sean Payton is such a great coach that I think that there would, even if you had a head coach in place that is a above average coach that has a good team, I think that any coach would be in jeopardy of losing their job with the opportunity that an owner could look at Sean Payton and say, hey, I think you could take us even farther. So I'll be curious to see what that looks like, how that all comes together for Sean Payton. But I have to imagine that he's going to get back into coaching sooner rather than later. Mark it down. I think he's a head coach in 2024. I don't think that, like, I would be shocked if he's not a head coach past that point. And really, I think 2023 will be a prime, ripe opportunity for Sean Payton to get back into things.
It seems interesting to, I mean, we have no idea what's going on there, but to step back when you're just kind of like, yeah, I don't love this situation. Like, your team is 70-something million over the cap. You have no franchise quarterback, and you're just going to be like, yeah, I'm not messing with this. I'm not touching this mess. I'm going to go ahead and go help with this Kevin James movie, and then I'm gonna find greener pastures.
It does feel like there's an element of quitting to it, right? Like, you're leaving the Saints high and dry, and leaving them in an awful state. And if I'm Saints fans, I am beside myself right now. I mean, losing Drew Brees and you know, dealing with life after Drew Brees, incredibly frustrating watching all these quarterbacks, and then to think that you're gonna lose Sean Payton. On top of that, my goodness, that's hard. That's some hard news. And I do think there is an element of that. I do think there is an element of Sean Payton looking at the career that he's built and saying, yeah, when people talk about my coaching record, when people talk about my run with New Orleans, I don't want it to be tainted by, you know, how this thing could potentially end here with my contract and how bad the situation can be. And there also could be an element of it, Stacey, where he went through the year without Drew Brees, going through four or five different quarterbacks and saying, man, this stinks. Like, I just don't want to coach. This wasn't fun for me, and I don't want to go into another year dealing with the same thing again. So, yeah, a lot to digest there. But if you're any NFL fan out there, you are incredibly interested in wondering to yourself, in 2 years, Sean Payton coming to my team?
Tom Brady isn't the only Tampa Bay Buccaneer mulling retirement. Rob Gronkowski, speaking to reporters Monday, this from Sports Illustrated, said he's also considering whether or not he'll come back. He said, quote, I'm really going to do what's best for myself in terms of the football world. It's going to be a decision based upon where I'm at in a couple weeks. Now, Gronkowski, 32 years old, I'm going to go ahead and bet, is back if Brady is back. That's just my gut.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment on that. And Gronk isn't going to play without Brady. I think he was really enjoying the retired life. Like, he was enjoying the retired life and doing just fine. And then when Brady made that move to Tampa, he was able to lure Rob Gronkowski back in, and Gronk was able to get healthy and take care of his body during that time. And you've seen him be able to stay healthy over the last two seasons. So I don't think Gronkowski is dealing with the same injury issues that he was in New England that would make him, you know, think about retiring himself again. It's just whether or not Tom is going to be there. And if I'm Gronk, I wouldn't want to play for any other quarterback either.
All right, next story here. Heading to Buffalo for back-to-back stories. Bills OC Brian Daboll is interviewing for a couple head coaching gigs, and Josh Allen isn't particularly thrilled, though that's completely understandable. He told ESPN, quote, "I'm praying they don't hire him, that is, because I want him here, but I love him and his family too much to really think that. I think he's one of the best coaches in the league." Josh Allen said a team would be a fool not to hire Daboll, but if Daboll moves on, it means that Sean McDermott is going to have to find another offensive coordinator. McDermott said Josh Allen will absolutely, quote, be in the loop for a new OC hire, which brings me also to another point, Jake. Why was anyone questioning whether or not Russell Wilson would be in the loop? It's one thing to question whether or not he should have final say, or any player should have final say over personnel and coaching hires. To question whether or not a quarterback should be in the loop at all seems kind of silly given how important that role is to a quarterback's development.
No question. It's everything. It's everything. So when you have a star quarterback, he better be on board with it. He better be on board with the offense and you know, be excited about what it can be and feel like they have a good connection. That is so important. That's everything. So it's not weird at all. It's the right thing to do. I think it would be malpractice to not have your quarterback in the loop or heavily involved in the offensive coordinator search. And that doesn't, like you said, doesn't mean you get final say. That's up to the head coach. That's up to the GM in terms of the final say and who they ultimately bring in. But you better make sure your quarterback is on board with it and excited about it and feels like it's the right thing for him, or it could potentially be disastrous and be derailing.
Sticking with the Bills, we didn't talk about this yesterday, but let's get to it today. You guys remember Tyreek Hill going for that touchdown to not ice the game for Kansas City, but certainly get them back into it. Well, Bills fans are upset because Tyreek Hill was not given a taunting flag for throwing up a peace sign on his way into the end zone. In the postgame press conference, NFL Network's Kim Jones asked head coach Sean McDermott if Hill should have been flagged, to which Sean replied, quote, "I appreciate you asking that, Kim. You're very observant, but I'm not going to go any further."
I when I saw it, I immediately thought about that too. I mean, did you guys think about that at all, or were you guys just caught up in the fact that he was scoring a touchdown?
I wondered it after the fact, because did they mention it on the broadcast, or maybe it was just on Twitter, because I was also following
the game on
Twitter.
I think it was just
on
social media.
But I also agree with the decision not to flag. Is it an inconsistent application of the rule? Yes. Do I hate the rule, and do I think that it would have ruined the end of that game? Yeah. So if I were a Bills fan, I'd be upset, because I'd be like, 9 out of 10 times that would have been flagged. You can't do that. We know you can't do that. You can't even turn and face other players when you celebrate. You have to face your own teammates. Like, this rule has been so ticky-tacky all year long. In any other game, that would have been flagged. It wasn't, but I'm only fine with it because as a fan, as someone watching the game, not as a Bills fan, I think the rule has been over-applied.
Well, and in the NFL, the taunting call on a scoring play does not negate the score the way it does in college. So Tyreek Hill would have scored the touchdown regardless.
You would have had
The penalty would have been forced either on the extra point try, which if I'm the Bills, I might have enforced it there because... Or the extra point try or the kickoff. So if I'm the Bills, I would probably have enforced it, I would guess, on the extra point try, just because now it becomes, what, like a 48-yard extra pointer?
Yeah, it becomes a legit field goal.
Yeah, that's not an easy make.
No, so I would agree with that and the inconsistency of that in that moment.
Any feedback from Aaron
is incredibly frustrating, and I would be frustrated if I was a Bills fan. There's no question about that. But, Stacey, to your point, this is a – I mean, look, Tyreek Hill is making an obscene gesture at a player as he's going and scoring a touchdown. That's one thing. holding up a peace sign, I mean, can we have fun, please? Like, can we take the fun police out of this and let's just enjoy having some fun and watching some good football? Like, I don't understand
now,
it. And I hope that the NFL really backs off this taunting penalty, you know, going into next year, because there was some ridiculous taunting penalties.
There were, but flip side, imagine if the Seahawks, if this had been an NFC divisional game and Tyreek Hill were to instead be Cooper Kupp or what have you, and someone flips up a peace sign, then the conversation we're having instead is like, hey, that should have been a taunting flag, because of course it should have, because that's the way the rule would have been applied in any other regular season game and probably in any other postseason game. But the problem is, and this is what bothers me the most, the problem is refs probably know in that moment this gets in the way of the game naturally unfolding in a way that is like the best possible viewing experience. And if I'm able to think that in this moment, like, why am I constantly doing it in the regular season over these ticky-tacky things? I don't know. The taunting rule seems like such a waste of time. And
I
do think that was taunting by the rule. The rule itself is stupid.
I totally agree with you. However, if I'm a Bills fan and I'm pointing to that as the reason you lost, like, come on. Like, let's get real. That's not the reason you lost. That isn't something that I would be holding on to and saying, see, if they would have called that, this game would have been this game would have been way different. 13 seconds. 13 seconds with the ball on the minus 20. That's on you. So I would be focusing more about on that situation more than I would be a non-taunting penalty by Tyreek Hill, even if it would be annoying.
All right, I know there is so much to react to after a wild divisional round weekend in either conference, but I do want to look ahead just a little bit to the conference championship games too. The Professor John Clayton going to join us at the top of the hour, so we're going to talk about some of these upcoming games with John. Before we get to that, though, Tom Brady has he said something about something he tries to keep his mind clear of when he plays, and I wonder if Russell Wilson does the same or not. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. You could say anything you want if you give 5 stars. You could say, wow, Curtis is really boring. I hate listening
whoa, whoa,
to
whoa,
him.
Whoa, 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 whoa,
you could
whoa,
say,
whoa.
Oh, my God, Jake, wow, like he's literally the worst and all his food takes are horrible, but I still tune in for Stacey. Like, whatever you guys want to say. I mean, you know, you give 5 stars and anything really goes. So,
you know, Stacey, the one thing that you said, you know, like all of the reviews that you've said have all been just like outrageous and funny and everybody knows it. So like, I'm glad that you said that about you having great food takes or that Curtis and I have bad food takes because everyone knows that clearly you're joking.
Yeah, Stacey, I think you could also leave a review that says, like, despite her age, Stacey is really up on things, and, you know.
Well, her age would indicate otherwise.
Exactly.
I'm really excited. All right. But, yeah, please, 5 stars. 5 stars. Tom Brady in a – this is his own podcast, correct? What's he calling it?
The Let's Go podcast.
The Let's Go podcast. This is his own podcast. So this is the same one where he talked about, you know, hey, I might want to consider moving on and spending time with my wife and kids. Like, he didn't say that explicitly, but said, like, my wife deserves for me to be a husband and my kids deserve for me to be a dad. And, like, it's clear that, like, while he isn't set on retirement right now, that time is certainly inching closer because he knows that he wants to spend that time with his family and that his family deserves to have that time with him, and vice versa. And so he talks about some of that, and I'll get to that. But one of the things he talked about that I thought was interesting, Jake, and I was curious to bring this up with you, is he talks about thinking about accolades and legacy and whether or not he ever thinks about that when he's playing.
I think that would be distracting for me. You know, I'm really ultimate, you know, my enjoyment comes from not a recognition of kind of what I've accomplished as a player in the league. My enjoyment comes from the competition. So more so than anything, even yesterday, I was thinking about competing. I was thinking about, you know, this whole year about competing. I wasn't thinking about anything other than that. So when the time comes to think about post-career and second career, I'll think about those things.
Now, I think I know where some Seahawks fans are very naturally going, which is, does Russell Wilson have that same mindset? Don't forget this from Russ back in September 2020.
I don't want a vote. You know, I think more importantly, you know, I want to win, you know, and I think, you know, obviously MVP is a special award. You know, this is the best football players in the world. And there's so many great guys. You know, I think about guys like Lamar last year. It was unbelievable last year. Such a great player. You know, guys like Patrick Mahomes and some other greats, obviously, that still play this game, and Tom and Drew. And, you know, I think for me, I want to be regarded as one of the best to ever play this game. You know, to be honest with you, I think it's part of the process. And hopefully, you know, I can, you know, win enough games and do enough special things as a team to be able to do that. It's a team award, really, I think, you know, in terms of the MVP.
I want to add an important caveat here, which is that, one, Russell Wilson is clearly incredibly competitive. And I don't blame anyone, him or any other player, for being like, yes, of course I want to be MVP. Of course I want to be the best. I want to be the best. That's why I do this. Every single player, whether he says it or not, thinks that. I'm telling you that right now. Secondly, it's easy now for Tom Brady, the most accomplished quarterback ever, to look back and say, yeah, I don't really worry about accolades or my legacy while I'm playing. Well, yeah, Tom, because you have literally nothing more to prove to anyone. Like, you could walk away now and be the best to ever play, ever.
Right.
So I will acknowledge both of those things. That said, Jake, something Curtis and I were wondering earlier is, like, if Brady finds it distracting to think about accolades or MVP or any of this when he's playing, does Russell Wilson?
Well, I think that there's a clear difference between goal setting and being distracted by the goal setting while you're playing. And I think for Tom Brady and Peyton Manning or any of these elite quarterbacks to say that they haven't thought about or had a desire to win MVP or to win Super Bowls and to have those goals and those aspirations behind the scenes, like, would you believe them?
No, absolutely not.
They all have those aspirations. Every single one of them do, right? Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, they all have those aspirations. You go down the list, right? You know, Aaron Rodgers talking about, you know, while he's playing this year, about the MVP race and the MVP votes and, you know, someone, you know, bashing him, you know, because they don't like him and how stupid that would be and all those things. Like, these guys all care about it. And I listen to that soundbite and it's like, oh, the horror. Gosh, what he's saying is so horrifically wrong after the season is over. Like, these guys goal set. Russell Wilson has big ambitions, has big goals for himself and what he wants to do with his career and who he wants to be. He's been that way since day one. And guess what? When Russell Wilson showed up on day one and told Pete Carroll, "I'm going to be your starting quarterback," I didn't hear anybody, you know, think that was a bad thing. I just think that this conversation's been so incredibly skewed.
Well, because then he was a plucky underdog. I think that people
right.
are.
But,
I am
but
not agreeing with
that. It's the same mentality.
It is.
It's the same thought process.
It is.
It's
but
the
I think
same
that
approach
people's
that he's
narrative
always had.
Changed. I think that people have a false narrative about. Having that goal setting is selfish, right? And here's the thing. Even if a player is selfish, if he can ball out, do you really care that much? Like, do you need to think that the quarterback or the best defensive player or best offensive player or whoever on your team is also, like, the most selfless, kindest person you've ever met in your life that never once at any point in the day thinks about himself or his own career ambitions?
Well, I think Aaron Rodgers is a perfect illustration of that, right? Like, this is somebody that clearly thinks about himself first and foremost, and he's been able to be very, very successful. And, you know, nobody gives him a hard time until he loses in the playoffs, right? But I do overall to your question, though, Russell, when he's in the season and when he's in game mode and when he's in that environment, like those things aren't in his head. What's in his head is trying to win the game, trying to win the moment, trying to win practice, trying to win and execute what they're asking him to do at the highest level. That's his mindset. And quite frankly, I've been around when other people around him have brought up these other things, these peripheral conversations, and immediately shut them down and be like, I'm not talking about that. I'm not worried about it, and being mad that it's being brought up. So, I mean, that to me, there's a big difference in terms of goal setting and being honest about what his goals are, mm-hmm. and for any star quarterback, what their goals are versus what they're focused on and how they're going about their job on a day-to-day basis. And that's where I think this whole thing has been skewed in a dramatic way, you know, based, you know, recently. And, you know, people have wanted people to be, you know, oh, we want Russell to open up. Well, he opened up. He opened up about his goals. He opened up about his aspirations. Opened up about how he wants to be viewed. And people turned right back around and said, you're selfish for that. So,
well, yeah, because I think people are like, they kind of like have this weird idea of you can't ever be open about wanting the biggest accomplishments for yourself.
Well, I just don't agree with that. That you want to lie about what your goals are and your aspirations are. I don't understand that. And you hear the 360 says, yeah, but Russell doesn't take any personal responsibility when goals aren't met. I disagree with that. I see it behind the scenes all the time in terms of him acknowledging, you know, the areas in which he needs to improve, acknowledging that he needs to be better, acknowledging that there's areas that he needs to work on in the off season. I think that there's also answers that he's given where, you know, he's talked about the offensive line, for instance, I'm tired of getting hit, and him saying, you know, the focus wasn't on him and how he can be better, but he does sneak in there, I need to be better too. And that's not what people want. They want more of, I'm bad, I need to fix this, I need to be that way, and I understand that. But Russell Wilson isn't going to be Derek Carr. Derek Carr sometimes after games will be like, gosh, Stacey, I suck today. Our team overcame my inability to perform my job. And that's Derek Carr's personality. Russell Wilson's personality is not to be that way. Russell Wilson's personality is not to, you know, it's all goes into a deeper conversation about, you know, self-talk and Trevor Moad and how he was basically, you know, trained himself not to think in that way. But it doesn't mean he doesn't take personal responsibility for his play or how he can improve and his role in helping this team win. He fully acknowledges that and understands that, especially, you know, after the last two seasons and has been very motivated to, you know, play better football and wants to be at his best.
Plenty of exciting things to talk about following those divisional games, but let's look ahead to the conference matchups with the Professor John Clayton next.